And our special guest tonight, Drunvalo Melchizedek, author of Serpent of Light, Beyond 2012, and more when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Drunvalo, tell me a little bit about this ET visitation and when you think this might come. Is it around 2012?
Well, okay, let me talk about that for just a second before we go into that. The idea that December 21st, 2012 is when this will happen, according to the Mayans, that's the least likely day.
Least likely.
It's not going to happen on that day. They said, forget it. What they call, they have what is called a window of time, and the name they give to it is the end of time. It's a window that's about 7 or 8 years long. And this window, this time, I believe, as I understand what they had to tell me, began on October 24th, 2007, and it ends sometime in 2015.
So that's a pretty good window.
Yeah, and all they're willing to say is that somewhere in that window is when it's going to happen. They will not say for sure because I don't think they know exactly, precisely the time, because it is... when the Earth actually makes its move, is all they can say is it's sometime in there.
But they see the signs, don't they?
Yeah, and that date of October 24th, 2007 is a very interesting date. That is the day when that comet came into the solar system called Comet Holmes,
mm-hmm.
and then it blew up, and it started expanding into a big blue sphere. And it literally became bigger than the sun. It's now registered as the largest object ever observed in our solar system in history. And it did that on October 24th, 2007. Now, the Hopi prophecy that you were talking about, they have a prophecy that began, happened about 200 years ago, and it's called the Blue Star Prophecy.
Well, this one had a blue tail.
It turned into a blue sphere.
Yes.
Bigger than the sun.
Yeah.
And so the Hopi now believe that that was the blue star prophecy, and the Mayans believe that that is the moment when the end of time began.
The clock is
And so
ticking.
We're in it. So when it'll happen, I don't think they're going to prophesize a certain day. In fact, they told me no, that it just is sometime in here, and that's all they can say.
When this happens, as Edgar Cayce has predicted in terms of Earth changes, will we see massive upheaval in that? You know, we're already seeing, ice melting in the Arctic.
Oh, yeah.
We're seeing it. We're seeing shifts everywhere.
And look out for Ross's shelf.
Yeah. These things break off.
It's cracking. Holes are forming all over it. And then they're going, and then forming lakes that are going all the way down to the bottom where you can see the water running and then coming back up and forming bigger ones. The scientists I talk to that are working down there say this thing's going to go.
There are island nations now that can't sustain an increase in ocean sea levels.
Well, almost all the islands, most of them are going to have a real problem because the water rises up over the top of their water, their freshwater system, and the salt goes in and invades their freshwater, and that's it. It's over.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. They have to abandon that whole region.
And then you also have the coral reefs that are all around them that are dying. This is another huge problem that is going on, and a lot of people are not aware because when they figured it out, they became very quiet about it after that. But the environmental scientists were quiet for years because the amount of carbon dioxide that we have been emitting into the atmosphere, we should have had problems, far worse problems, years and years ago, but we didn't. And because the carbon dioxide was somehow disappearing, they didn't know where it went. And it was about 3 years ago they figured it out. It has been absorbed into the oceans. And at first they thought, oh, good, we found out where it is. And then there was this really somber attitude that came out after that when they figured out exactly what it meant. Right now, the carbon dioxide levels in our oceans are what they were 100 million years ago.
Okay, how can that be?
It's just fact. They've absorbed enough carbon dioxide that they now have the same levels that they were 100 million years ago. And what this means is that most of the life that's in our oceans now is going to die The things that were there 100 million years ago, like sharks, et cetera, will make it through. And then something else will a new kind of ocean will evolve out of all of this.
And maybe new species, maybe not.
Probably. Something that likes carbon dioxide, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so we never... That was a huge shock to everybody I knew that was involved in this, that's where it was going. They had no idea. And that's a large of the things, that's a big problem that's causing the coral reefs to die. I mean, we're going to have over 80% of all the coral reefs in the world will be gone in our lifetime.
I've got a regular guest who comes on the program, Robert Felix, and he says we're in the beginning stages of an ice age. What do you think?
I say absolutely.
You do? Okay.
In fact, I could go into great detail if you want me to.
Yeah, please. You know, he's a rebel, and there aren't a lot of scientists and climatologists out there who would agree with him.
We know the cycle. We know it very well. And it's all been presented to the United Nations, and they just freak out and will not look at it. But Dr. John Hammaker was the primary person who headed all of this. And he went around to all the ancient lake beds all over the world and took these core samples out of the ancient lake beds. And there you can just see it. There is about roughly 90,000 years with no pollen, followed by about 10,000 years with pollen, followed by 90,000 years. It's an average. It's about that warm period is about 8 to 12,000 years, and the ice ages are that 90,000 years is an average. It can go up to 120,000 years, but that cycle has been going on for at least 250 million years that he figured out, and other people have taken it back over 500 million years, and so this and we've had a warm period for over 10,000 years, so an ice age would come. Anyway, even if there were no human beings on Earth.
Right. The cycle.
It's a cycle. But we're adding to it. So we've moved it up. Nobody's going to know how many years. It maybe it's 500 years or 1,000 years, but we've moved it up closer. And what that cycle is based on is one word, minerals. That's it, period, 100%. Well, not counting the sun, which is another factor. That's a whole other subject. But if you're only looking at the Earth, it's minerals, because what John Hammaker found is that when the minerals, we'll start at this part of the cycle where we are in right now, today, when the minerals run out, and that's what's been going on for 20, 25, 30 years, a little bit, actually since about 1940 when the big fire happened in Alaska, in 41 I think it was, and the minerals run out, and then what happens is the trees and the plants and the organic structure all begins to get sick and die, and then the forest fires begin.
Mm-hmm.
And every acre of trees has 50,000 tons of carbon dioxide in it, and that begins to create the global warming pattern that we're experiencing right now. And then it keeps going until... there's this period, and this is all scientifically figured out. It's not just me saying this. There's about a 20-year period where the weather goes crazy. It's just what it's been doing for the last 20 years.
Right. I mean, we're in a so it's we seem to be in a lull right now.
Well,
but I don't know if that's going to last.
It could be anything. I mean, the El Nino, when it goes, you read in the environmental books, if it happens once, it changes the world's weather patterns, but it might take 20, 30 years
yeah.
for it to happen. It's happened in the last 12 out of the last 13 years. So, I mean, whatever your weather is, who knows what it would be, assuming that none of these other things took place.
Though I agree with you, talking about the sun as a program all by itself.
Oh, yeah.
Let me ask you this. We are in... one of the biggest times of minimum sunspots. They're not there.
I know. It's really strange.
It's got to have an effect as we get to 2012. I mean, it's almost as if they truly understood all this. It's all related, isn't it?
Well, yeah, the sunspots are really important. And this may have to do with why the Earth's magnetic poles are reversing, too. And that is directly connected to that whole thing. I mean, everything is connected to everything. In fact, if you knew what I knew about sacred geometry and the planets and the orbits and everything, it's unbelievable. It's like people look at the moon and they say, well, it's just it's a 27 point something days. It's a never ending cycle, and it's female, and it is very hard to calculate in a lot of ways
yeah.
that's been done. But did you know that that is precisely the day of the sun? The sun rotates in exactly 27 point something things, exactly the same as the moon. And in the geometry of the human body, when we were unfolding these electromagnetic fields around the human body, one of the first things we discovered was that there's this circle with another circle on top of it, and the proportions are identical to the size of the Earth and the size of the moon.
See, how do you explain that? How do you explain this sacred geometry? I mean, one could think there was incredible intelligent design behind all of it, which I believe.
Well, there definitely is. Whoever created the universe was a single mind, because we can show, I can show clearly to anybody how every single thing in existence, at least on Earth anyway, and anything that we can see in the solar system, in the universe, is all based on sacred geometry. It's the same patterns over and over and over, created again and again and again. And even things that you would never believe were geometrical, like love and emotions and feelings, they're geometrical. It was Manfred Klein who was the one who figured that out. He's written up even in the Wall Street Journal that they can take somebody in one room and they can watch their electromagnetic field from another room and tell what they're feeling, and then they can convert that into a geometrical form that you hold into your hand. Everything, no matter whether it's seen or unseen, is geometrical. And mathematics themselves is not, many people think that mathematics is the basic or the core of the reality, but really it's not true. It's shape and proportion, and that's what creates the mathematics.
When you speak at workshops and seminars, what major issue do most people bring up to you? What's on their mind?
Well, they come to me mostly to learn about consciousness and how it works inside the body. And so that, to me, that is the most important thing to understand right now. And so we've taken many of the different understandings from all around the world and applied them into a single system so that we can understand how it all works, and you can truly increase your level of awareness of things. But on a really simple everyday life, they want to know exactly how to deal with the problems that they have in their lives.
Yeah,
I mean, we're all human, and we all have families, and we have to make money, and we have to do all these
things. These are priorities.
Yeah, you have to. You can't just forget about that stuff. I mean, there's been times when I've gone off into the forest and just forgot about the world in order to understand things. But not, you know, you can't do that. I can't do that now. I got five kids.
You can't do that.
And so, again, in everything that I've learned, it really comes down to understanding how the energies move through your body, and so that you're able to conserve and create your own energy. There's a way where you can breathe through these energy fields that are around your body so that they begin to spin in two different directions. And when they do, this disc appears at the base of your chakra system, at the base of your spine, right close to it, and a sphere appears around your body. And this is called the Merkaba. It's, in ancient Egypt, it was called the Merkaba.
This is what you've got in your book, Living in the Heart, right?
It's actually the Ancient Secret of the Flower of Life, Volume 1 and 2, is where we first talked about that. That's one of the first books that came out. But the Living in the Heart is part of it, because the brain is the generator that creates the Merkaba field. It's actually the left brain and the right brain rotating in opposite directions that creates this energy field that all of the ancient world knew and understood. But that is only the external field. The internal fields have to do with the heart. And so you have two different consciousness parts in the body. In modern-day life, we only think of the brain. We think the brain is the greatest thing that ever happened. But the heart is way older, and it is far more stronger, and it has more intelligence than the brain does. And I can actually show you this.
Okay.
When you look at conception, and you look at a human baby, it begins as a sphere, which is the, it's all geometrical too. It begins as a sphere, which is the ovum. And then we often think that it takes one sperm to go in there and fertilize the egg, but it actually takes either 10, 11, or 12 of them, making a pattern on there that allows the 11th, 12th, or 13th one to enter in. And then there begins, through mitosis, it divides into two cells, and then it divides into four, and they're in a tetrahedron when they do that.
Yes.
And then they go into eight, and they form a star tetrahedron, which is also a cube. And then they keep progressing geometrically through this whole pattern until they get to 512 cells. And at that point, they form what is called a toroidal field. It's one of the unique energy fields of the universe, and everything in the universe is based on it. There's no exceptions. And that toroidal field, as it keeps growing, what it becomes is the human heart. And there's a place when you and I and everybody that's listening to this, there's a time in your life when you were a human heart and nothing else.
And nothing else.
You had no,
that's something.
You had no arms and legs and brain or anything. You were just a heart. And the heart started beating.
Beating away, yeah.
And doctors for years have said, well, how can this be? There's no brain. There's no intelligence. And then it was HeartMath out of Stanford who discovered that there is a brain in the heart. It's small. It's only 40,000 cells. But it's brain cells, not heart cells.
And it keeps beating for years and years.
It keeps beating. And then at a point, after it's all developed, then the body comes out of the heart and forms the fetus. And then the heart is pulled into the chest cavity. And we see the familiar fetus that we're used to. But this shows, at least intuitively, that the heart is older and in one way more important than the brain.
That's a great analogy, too.
And you can go back into ancient Egypt, and when they would mummify a king or a pharaoh or somebody important, they would take all the organs out of the body, and they would make four clay jars, and they would put all the organs into those four clay jars except for two, the brain and the heart. And the heart, they would put back in the body because they said it was essential. They couldn't move on to the other levels without it. What did they do with the brain? They threw it in the garbage can.
They got rid of it, yeah.
Because it was useless to them. And to understand that took me about 15 years.
That's pretty good. That is pretty. Are you saying that consciousness may originate from not just the brain, but primarily the heart?
Yes. This is what all the ancient teachings from the Vedas, from the Tibetans, from the Tibetan law, all over. This is what they understand, and it's their secret of their secrets, is that creation itself began in the heart. The outer world, according to all of these people, does not actually exist. It isn't there. There's nothing there. It's just pure consciousness, and it's external. It appears external to us, but it's really internal.
And you know what's amazing, too? Simply, like Valentine's Day, it's, you know, directly related about the heart, symbolism everywhere, the heart, wherever you go, it's the heart.
We remember on a level that we had, at the last pole shift 13,000 years ago, we had a big shock, and we dropped in consciousness. We lost our ability to protect ourselves. We lost our memory. We went back into being hairy barbarians. We had to learn fire all over again. And we had a huge shock, and this time it's going to be different. It's going to be much better, and even though we don't look like it, we're far more prepared this time, and people are going to be amazed.
Let's chat a little bit about this ET visitation you were talking about, and more about consciousness of the brain with our special guest tonight, Drunvalo Melchizedek, Serpent of Light, Beyond 2012. We'll be back in a moment, right here on Coast to Coast AM. So he could very well be right in the middle of this window. How long it goes, it's anybody's guess. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with our special guest, Drunvalo Melchizedek. We'll be back with more questions for him, though, on Coast to Coast AM. I got to find out a little bit more about this ET connection, Drunvalo. The the visitations that the Hopis have talked about and the Mayans have talked about as well, and even though you say they're here now, is there going to be a major type event where we all look to the skies like the movie Independence Day?
Well, I think it's going to be a little bit more out of beyond that kind of imagination. What I know is this, from speaking again with indigenous tribes all over the world, is they talk to them all the time, and they visit them all the time on a weekly basis. It's not unusual for them, but they're also able to enter into fourth dimensional consciousness easily, where we don't even know what it is. Most of us don't. And going back again to the ideas that the external world is not really what we think it is; it is something else. It has to do with pure consciousness. Once we understand that, then there's going to be an enormous revelation in human consciousness. It's one we've already learned a long time ago. We've forgotten it, and really we're just going to remember it. It's going to feel like a gift. But the ETs are here now. They've been here for a long time. We've also been interacting primarily with ones that are very low level and don't have good intentions on us. I mean, the Greys wanted to eliminate us completely. But it's not how it really is out there in the universe. Our galaxy, for example, is a living being also. It has the same energy fields around it that our human body does. Mm-hmm. And they're not at war. The idea of Star Wars and everything's out there fighting is just simply not true. They're at peace, and they love each other, and they're taking care of each other. There's only a few that are growing up and understanding that there's more to life than what they think, and those are the ones that we've been having problems with. The majority of them that are here now really love us and care about us. And also, there are ones that are inside the Earth, and these that are inside the Earth really care about us and have a very personal thing about it. And they really want to help us, and they're going to. The protocol is, as I've understand it from many of the tribes, is that once we are to the proper level where we can actually see them and communicate with them, then the next thing is we have to be introduced to our mother and our father. And this, now you're getting into the ancient Sumerian records of what they were talking about there. They believed that there was the planet Marduk, and sure, Nephilim came in. And in there, they're talking about another planet that is not in our solar system, that was that actually was the father aspect, which was Sirius, from Sirius B, third planet out. And that race and this race that was here, the Nephilim, joined together and created the human race according to the oldest records on Earth. That's the cuneiform tablets, out of Sumeria.
Yep.
And before, what all these indigenous people are saying is that we will first meet our mother and our father, and what they're saying is we will first meet our father. These are the Sirians. They're about 10 to 16 feet high. Females are about 10 to 12 feet. Males are about 14 to 16 feet high.
Truly the giants.
They're tall. Yeah. There's much taller beings than that, but they're
really?
They're the next level of consciousness, which shows up in the sacred geometrical patterns, and they really care about us a lot. They have saved our life already, and we're not aware of it because of what's going on in the sun. There's something happening on the sun right now that is far more than what we think, and we would not be able to survive this with our present level of consciousness without their help. And they truly have helped us. But according to the indigenous people, they are in caves all over the world right now. And there will come a time soon, and I don't know when that be, but it'll be inside this window, when we will be introduced to them. And I don't know if this is before the shift or after the shift, but they've never told me that. They all agree that there will be a point where we will meet our father first, and then our mother, and then the rest of the universe.
Will this planet ever be the same after that?
No.
That's pretty emotional for a lot of people.
We'll never be the same, and we won't even be on the same frequency of consciousness. We'll be a whole other thing, and it'll be a good thing. Because we fell. We were down in a very dark place, if you haven't noticed.
Yeah.
And we're about to go into a very light and loving place. And so, and where we're going to find out that our brothers and sisters really aren't out there to get us. They're out there to help us remember who we really are.
Will we do away with war? Will we do away with...
Oh, we won't need that. That's stupid.
That's all gone.
That's like the right hand taking a knife and stabbing the left hand. Any all higher level consciousness beings know that there is only one spirit that moves through everything. Just one. And it's always been this way, and we can't remember that. But when we do remember that, we will know that when you look in the eyes of another person, you're looking into your own eyes. When the Mayans meet each other on the trail, and they've been keeping this as a tradition going back to at least 26,000 years, they say the words "En Lakesh," and what that means is you are another me, and I am another you. That's how they say hello. And it's just the memory of the way it was a long time ago. And this dark night that we're in is almost over. Thank God.
Good. We've been in it way too long.
Yeah, I know. And there are all these conspiracies. There's a ton of them. When I was hearing you say about the main thing is population control, yeah. Absolutely. That's the primary reason for most of the actions that the governments are doing right now, because all the computer models show that and this is without exception that I'm aware of, that as soon as you reach a certain number, it's debatable on what that number is. It used to be 12 million, 4 billion, 14 billion,
yeah.
10 billion. They don't really know what it is, but there is a number out there that when we reach it, not only do all the humans die, but everything on Earth dies.
We just become unsustainable.
And so I can understand why they're concerned about this. But at the same time, Mother Earth is not stupid. And she is allowing these people to come in here. And they're coming from all over the place.
Don't you think this planet, knowing that it's alive, as tragic as it may seem, knows what levels of population this planet can sustain and
yes.
probably rectifies it?
Yes, it does, and it's already slowing it down. The human male sperm count all over the world is dropping, and it's been dropping for many years now. And now what we're seeing, what I'm seeing as I go around, like in Japan and Russia and various places, is the women are coming up to me, young women, and saying, I can't get pregnant, and I'm really trying. And I'm hearing this over and over and over, all over, that women cannot, and I believe that this is the Mother Earth is slowing down this process, but she's allowed this many to come forth, and exactly why, that's speculation. I don't really know.
Yeah, yeah. This consciousness that you have studied and that I am fascinated with ties us into this invisible force in the universe.
Oh, yeah, it really does.
How do we teach people to use it?
Well...
To get on that road.
Like I said, it took me 14 years just to figure out the field. And then it took me really until just the last 6 or 7 years, I've understood all the final details. I mean, I can very quickly show you the complexity of what's inside of us that we have long forgotten. But we have this. Just to give you a view, we have an energy field. It's an electromagnetic field. It sits at about 4 degrees Kelvin or 4 degrees above absolute zero. It's a very weak field, but it's incredibly geometrical. It's so geometrical that to see all the geometries that are around you requires a computer. And this energy field is, when you breathe in a certain way, it spins in both directions and it forms like, looks like a flying saucer around the body, which is the Merkaba. But that's only the beginning. Inside the brain, there are 4 different glands that have to be activated simultaneously to actually turn this on properly. And it can only be done when the spirit of the body leaves the brain literally leaves it. It travels away from it and moves down into the heart, where the ancients talk about this little tiny place, the sacred place in the heart. There's two of them. There's a sacred place that's very small, and then inside of that is even a smaller one. And this is talked about in the Upanishads 6,000 years ago in India. And when the spirit can move back into the heart instead of the brain, it then goes backwards energetically toward the brain, and it does it through the tip of the tongue on the roof of the mouth. Now, why would that have anything to do with it?
Yeah.
Well, you remember when we said that when there was the human heart and the body came out of the heart?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the first thing is?
The tongue?
The tip of the tongue.
Really?
It's the first thing that emerges out of the body that merges out.
Interesting.
And so you can intuitively see that the sacred space of the heart is connected somehow to the tip of the tongue. And on the roof of the mouth is something that we don't know, but there's literally a sexual organ in there that looks like a vagina with a clitoris, and it doesn't function until it's massaged in a certain way. And when it does, little bump forms, and the sexual energy flows between the heart and the brain, and it goes to the thalamus. And the thalamus, when you do that, it begins to fire alpha in the four quadrants of the brain. And when you do this long enough and the alpha is equal or relatively equal in the four quadrants of the brain and strong enough, then the pineal gland, which is the third eye, it's literally an eyeball.
Right.
It is hollow. It has color receptors in it. It has a lens on it and is facing up instead of out at 90 degrees to what we are now. And in the ancient writings, they talk about how you have to bend that. Well, it's with intention. You turn that eye and look out what we call the third eye. But what you're looking at is the pituitary gland, which is right in front of there. And when the alpha is fired up high enough, then when you what appears is a green light appears all inside of you. It could be a greenish yellow or it could be a greenish blue, but it's green in nature. And you begin to look at that direction. Your eyes have to slightly go up because it's a higher place than where your normal eyes are. And when you look at that other one, then what happens is a spiral usually occurs, and it locks those two together. And then there's another one behind it. And when you connect with that one, then around your head, there are these eight beams of light that are formed, and a sphere appears around your head. And at that moment, whatever you're dreaming in your heart becomes reality in the outer world. And I mean flat out real. And it doesn't. And there are people that are actually studying this. Dr. James Hart, one of the greatest brain researchers on the planet, has looked into all of this and has been able to see that these things are actually occurring. They can scientifically test them as they're happening. They're testing the creation process. You can create with your brain or you can create with your heart, but there's a big, big difference. And so most people in the world are creating with their brain. You remember that DVD that came out called The Secret?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
You know, and they made $100 million on that. And they're telling everybody, you know, laws of attraction, you do this, 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 and this, and you can have all the money you want, and everything else is how they talk about it. But when you create with your brain, the brain is a polarized instrument. It is a left and a right side, male and female. And whatever you create, you're going to get the equal and opposite creation coming from behind you where you don't see. So if you whatever you create, you're going to get exactly what you don't want. And it works the other way around, too. If you create something evil, dark, you're going to create something light also. But and then you look at all the people that were involved in that and what's happened. They're all in court suing each other, and all the money's tied up in courts, and it will be for years and years and years because that's what's coming back from behind them. But if you create from your heart, it has a single eye, not two.
Is that creating what the old saying was, though, what goes around comes around?
Well, that's karma.
Yeah.
That's karma. That's a little different. Whatever you do, you're going to find the same thing coming back at you. It is related in that you're still creating when you, whatever you do, every word you say, every thought you have, every feeling, you're creating in one way or another. But if you create from the heart, you get only, the heart will never create anything that harms anybody anywhere.
I haven't asked you of the date here that you have on the cover of the book, 1949 to 2013. Why that window?
Well, because I really believe that we will not get past 2013. And it's a long understanding of all of this and long talks with the Mayans. The Mayans don't think so either.
It's almost like it's a date on a tombstone.
Well, kind of. There's a certain date in there, February 19th, that I think that is going to be, in the future, is going to be 2013 will be a very important date.
But when you say we won't get past it, don't we start
the
again?
The old way of existing, the way we are now.
Okay.
We're going to change into something new, and it will. And on that date, we will really take off. Though the Mayans, I wish I could say something, but they believe it's going to happen much sooner.
Yeah, when can we expect an announcement from the
elders? Well, they're creating a movie right now. It's called The Shift of the Ages. And this is headed by Don Alejandro Cerrillo, who is the president or the Dalai Lama of the entire Mayan nation of all 440 tribes, and they're creating a movie around him, and where he is going to explain what the Mayans know and what they believe is going to happen. I don't know when that's coming out, but. I know they're almost done with it.
Well, the window, according to them, is up to 2015, I guess.
Yeah, somewhere in there. They never told me the exact date. According to the Hopi, there will be a red star that will appear. And that red star will mark the end of this window.
Well,
but I don't know.
What would be the significance of the red star if we already think the blue one was that comet?
Well, I don't know. It's like right now there is in the constellation of Orion there's a star about to form a supernova, and it happen any minute the way it's occurring. And if it does, it will affect us here.
Oh, sure will.
And
it will
form a huge red star in the sky.
Well,
so maybe that's it. Maybe it isn't. I don't know.
Do they ever look at the biblical book of Revelation, Junvalo? Do they look at that and say, there were signs here, too?
The Mayans?
Yeah.
they don't have real good feelings. Most of the tribes don't have good feelings about from the Christians. Not that they're bad people or anything. It isn't that. It's just that they were persecuted quite heavily, especially with the conquistadors and what happened
to
all of that. So they were forced into it. But they have their own ideas, and it's these ideas that we are interested in. And yes, there are books all over the world that talk about this in different ways, not only the Bible, but the first five books of the Bible are also very, very important because that's the Jewish Torah. And that's where you have, if you remember a few years ago, we heard about the Bible Code.
Yep.
And
Michael Drosnin's.
Yeah, exactly. And he was the one that revealed that out to the world. I spent a long time with the University of Jerusalem and the work that they were doing there. And it's pretty clear now from what they know now, because they have now looked at the names of over 30,000 people, and in every single case there, the name shows up, the exact date of their birth, the place of their birth, the exact day of their death, the exact place of their death. And in the crossword puzzle running across there is the major accomplishments of their life. What was never revealed is that it is an infinite geometrical progression, and it goes back, and every single word that person ever said is
written down. When we come back, we're going to take phone calls with our special guest, the author of Serpent of Light, Beyond 2012, Junvalo Melchizedek.